Good evening. A third arrest in the case of the killing of a black jogger by white men in Georgia. The mayor and governor prepare for a beach holiday, and the president says church is essential. With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with the news for Friday, May 22nd, 2020. And the Georgia man whose cell phone video of Ahmaud Arbery's fatal shooting helped reignite the case was charged with murder Thursday. The Georgia Bureau of Investigation said 50-year-old William Roddy Bryan Jr. was arrested on charges of felony murder and criminal attempt to commit false imprisonment. Arbery was slain February 23rd when a white father and son armed themselves and pursued him after spotting the 25-year-old black man running in their neighborhood. The director of the Georgia Bureau of Investigation is Vic Reynolds.
You know, I don't know if there was a proverbial last straw. I will tell you that in the conducting an investigation, what I would ask folks to remember is that we don't go into a situation of this nature investigating a person or persons. We go in investigating a set of facts. And once we start turning stones over, sometimes there's one or two stones underneath there that need to be turned over. And once we reached a point, and it was probably sometime Wednesday afternoon, Wednesday evening, when we began speaking with our folks there, that we'd reached the point in conjunction with the Cobb District Attorney's Office that we were convinced probable cause existed to make those charges. We proceeded to do that yesterday. It wasn't a proverbial last a moment of epiphany or anything of that nature. It was just an accumulation of various things that were there and various things we discovered over the last 16 days. I will say this, again, not to speak on the facts. They'll come out in a court of law, but I can tell you that if we believed he was a witness, we wouldn't have arrested him. We have accumulated a number of pieces of video in the case. I'm not going to speak specifically about what we took from him, but eventually that will come out in a court of law. But suffice it to say, there are a number of pieces of video that helped us get to this point. Our agents have looked over a ton of social media posts, and the majority of those will be made part of this file, which will be turned over to the district attorney's office. In any investigation, particularly one of this nature where we've charged three people, there's a great accumulation of pieces of evidence that eventually go into the deciding factors. We're finishing up the investigation into the murder. Again, there's no timeline. We go wherever the facts take us. And, you know, if the facts took us in another direction or to another person, we would go there. Right now, I do not anticipate that happening.
We know that Brian did not pull the trigger. So why would someone like him in these circumstances be charged with murder?
Felony murder is a crime in Georgia where if you are committing a felony crime and that crime ends up in the death of another human being, then that's a felony murder. And so as the warrants indicated, he's charged with an underlying felony. He's also charged with felony murder. So we believe the evidence would indicate that his underlying felony helped cause the death of Ahmaud Arbery. Things that that are relevant to this murder case we've looked at and are continuing to look at if they're relevant to the murder case. What I would ask people to remember is that sometimes things happen in a case where perhaps acts are foolish or perhaps acts are something that societally speaking we frown upon. Doesn't mean they're criminal. You know, we have to be able to differentiate. As my father often told me, differences in criminal acts and difference between acts of people who have their head stuck up their rear end. And so there's a difference. If the investigation leads to other folks, you know, those charges will be filed. If they don't, they won't. I will tell you at this point, we feel confident that the individuals who needed to be charged have been charged. The
attorney general. Question for Ms.
Arbery was killed when Gregory McMichael, 64, and his son Travis McMichael, 34, pursued him after spotting the 25-year-old black man jogging in their neighborhood. Brian lives in the same subdivision just outside the port city of Brunswick, Georgia. According to the police report, Gregory McMichael told police Roddy attempted to block him, which was unsuccessful. Joe Biden today declared he should not have been so cavalier on Friday when he told a prominent black radio host that African Americans who back President Donald Trump just ain't black. The presumptive Democratic presidential nominee quickly moved to address the fallout from his remark, and a call with the U.S. Black Chamber of Commerce added to his initial public schedule. Biden said he would never take the African American community for granted. He made the comments on The Breakfast Club, a radio program that is popular in the black community. And in New York City, as millions of Americans emerge from coronavirus lockdowns to gingerly celebrate Memorial Day, public health officials are concerned large gatherings might bring the virus roaring back. In the absence of clear federal guidance, it's largely been left to state and local officials to figure out how to celebrate the holidays safely. Experts warn the virus doesn't take a holiday. Mayor Bill de Blasio says residents must be smart and maintain social distancing regulations over the weekend. He says the city will have police officers at city beaches to make sure beachgoers adhere to a ban on swimming and to break up any large gatherings.
So I'm very hopeful that this weekend at our beaches, you're going to see people following the rules because they know it's the right thing to do. But if they need some reminders, of course, there'll be people out there educating, giving out face coverings. We will have the Parks Department out there in force to get the word out. They've been doing an amazing job, as we talked about earlier in the week. Parks Department has been stellar in this difficult season. They've been out there educating people, helping people. When you get to the beach access points, there'll be teams of city personnel there, reminding people of the standards we're holding, giving out the free face coverings, counting how many people are going on the beach, checking to make sure that there's the right number of people. We don't see any crowding on the beach. We don't see any crowding on the boardwalk. There are some parking areas. If we see those parking areas start to fill up, they're also going to set limits on that. And there will be vehicles constantly reminding people no swimming, no barbecuing, no sports. The things that will cause a problem, there'll be constant reminders to people. If we see over time that it's not working, as I've said before, we have the option of doing something more strict, which is not what I want to do, and we could put up fencing and close off the beaches entirely, but that is not our goal. Our goal is to make it work with the standards that I've delineated. Now, in parks around the city and all over the city, our social distancing ambassadors will be out in force. So these are civilian employees of the city government. 2,300 city employees will be out educating people, reminding them, giving out free face coverings. They'll be in 230 parks citywide. One of the things a lot of us are missing a lot in the city, I can confess I'm missing it all the time, is our amazing restaurants and bars. I spent a lot of time in those restaurants and bars, and I would love to see them back, and they will come back in due time. There are clear standards. We're not doing any dining in. I want to remind any restaurant or bar tries that. That is not going to end well. There will be enforcement. There has to be penalties. There'll be penalties. We're going to have teams from our Office of Nightlife and from Police Department going out around the city to restaurants and bars, getting these posters up, you see, reminding people that the idea is, if you go to a restaurant, a bar, it's for takeout, keep moving. Or, of course, you can get delivery at home. Take out, don't hang out. I want to give credit to the writers of this slogan because it's pretty damn clear. Take out, don't hang out. Another great way to be outside is our open streets. Now we have that sweet spot where we can do the open streets, keep them safe, make sure there's enforcement when needed, and allow people to enjoy it, especially in strategic locations where it's going to help avoid crowding, parks and other areas where it's important to have them. So I've been off to a great start, and today we are announcing a huge expansion. So far, there are over 31 miles of open streets and bike lanes. Tomorrow, we will open over 13 new miles. Community-based solutions is what animates the next thing I want to talk to you about. These are folks who have, in the last few years, folks in the Cure Violence movement, also known as the Crisis Management System. They are mediators, they are educators, they are people who stop violence before it even happens. And we agreed that it made sense for the Cure Violence movement to step forward in this moment of crisis and play a crucial role at the local level now, fighting the coronavirus just like they fight gun violence every day. We will work with 18 Cure Violence organizations across 21 neighborhoods of this city and use the trust that they have built in communities, the important standing they have, the reach they have, to educate people about the coronavirus, to help people do social distancing, to make sure folks have face coverings and are using them, to make sure they have a sense of all the things to do to keep themselves safe, their family safe, their community safe.
As usual, the mayor's news conference today was held remotely, with reporters asking questions by phone. A crew of journalists covering the mayor had been complaining among themselves of the restrictions on their ability to ask follow-up questions to the mayor. A reporter for Bloomberg News, Henry Goldman, expressed the problem to the mayor.
I'm good. You know, a bunch of reporters have a problem with the way in which these news briefings are structured. We don't know when we're going to be called. We don't know who is really on this call with us. We don't get an opportunity to ask a follow-up question because you mute our mics. And it's not a very productive way to conduct these news briefings from our point of view. We've had discussions with your press office about this. We still haven't seen any progress about this. And today in particular, when we see that you're moving the data criteria to a different kind of data, and we're looking at these graphs and they're not explicit in the numbers that we're seeing on these charts, it's extremely frustrating to a lot of us that we're in this mode of communicating with you. And I think that I just felt compelled to bring up these issues and see if we can't get them resolved. A lot of times you misunderstand our question or you don't directly answer it, and we don't have an opportunity to follow it up. So I just wanted to raise this issue and hope that that we can resolve this with your office.
Thank you, Henry. Let me just say on that, and then if you have a question on the matters at hand. Yeah, I think, and I've talked to a lot of New Yorkers about this, that people have found these daily briefings extremely helpful and informative, and that I think you guys have asked a lot of really pertinent questions and has led to a very helpful conversation and a lot of clear answers. But I'm happy to talk to you about it. I'll give you a call, and we can talk through. If there's other ideas to think about, I'm not going to respond right now because obviously we're in the middle of doing this. But let me happily talk to you about that, and we'll think about it together.
And that was Bloomberg reporter Henry Goldman. New York State Governor Andrew Cuomo expressed his own view on the beach openings for Memorial Day. He didn't seem as confident as the mayor, but he says the two leaders are on the same page.
I have the ability to coordinate local policies, right? I have the ability to override local policies. The policy in the city of New York is that the beaches are closed. I understand that thinking. The beaches in Nassau are open. The state beaches on Long Island are open. I think we have more of an operational issue, Zach. I think because the city beaches are closed, you'll have more demand, not on the Nassau beaches, because they're for Nassau residents only. And Suffolk beaches are for Suffolk residents only. So you'll have more demand on the state beaches. Jones Beach, Hither Hills, Robert Moses, Sunken Meadow. You could see an increased demand on those state beaches on Long Island because they are open to New York City residents. Now, we have a 50% capacity for those beaches also, so they can do social distancing. But I understand the policy in New York City. I understand the Nassau policy, and I understand the Suffolk policy. You know, they can make sense for the locality, but still create a regional issue. And I think the regional issue, people in New York City say, I want to go to the beach. We do have state beaches open precisely for that reason. The mayor knows, first of all, the legality of the situation. And if you had a situation like that, we would talk.
Another issue dogging the governor has been the large number of deaths in nursing homes across the state and nationwide. According to the Associated Press survey, more than 4,500 recovering coronavirus patients were sent to nursing homes by order of the governor in March, a directive that was scrapped on May 10th after the practice was linked to accelerating the death toll. Nursing home deaths in New York due to the virus are about 5,000. Nationally, over 35,500 people have died from coronavirus outbreaks at nursing homes and long-term care facilities, about a third of the overall death toll. Dr. Maria Van Kerkhove of the WHO, the World Health Organization, says the answer to the nursing home problem is more testing.
All residents really should be tested, and not only tested, but tested regularly. What I've heard from geriatricians is generally weekly would be good, at least biweekly, so that residents can then be separated and the transmission can be stopped. I'd say it might be very hard, especially as we relax some of the restrictions on visitors, which is essential, as you mentioned, essential to prevent the sense of social isolation among our seniors. As we relax those restrictions, it's going to be very hard to prevent all cases in the nursing home. The key then is sort of a rapid response to prevent transmission to the rest of residents and staff.
Meanwhile, President Trump made a brief appearance at a White House news conference today to announce that churches and religious personnel would now be considered essential workers.
Today, I'm identifying houses of worship, churches, synagogue, and mosques as essential places that provide essential services. Some governors have deemed liquor stores and abortion clinics as essential, but have left out churches and other houses of worship. It's not right. So I'm correcting this injustice and calling houses of worship essential. I call upon governors to allow our churches and places of worship to open right now. If there's any question, they're going to have to call me, but they're not going to be successful in that call. These are places that hold our society together and keep our people united. The people are demanding to go to church and synagogue, go to their mosque. Many millions of Americans embrace worship as an essential part of life. The ministers, pastors, rabbis, imams, and other faith leaders will make sure that their congregations are safe as they gather and pray. I know them well. They love their congregations. They love their people. They don't want anything bad to happen to them or to anybody else. The governors need to do the right thing and allow these very important essential places of faith to open right now for this weekend. If they don't do it, I will override the governors. In America, we need more prayer, not less. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Trump's order comes as he's been pushing for the country to reopen and stop an economic freefall months before he faces re-election. White evangelical Christians have been among the most loyal members of the president's base. White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany says it's safe to reopen churches if it's done in accordance with CDC guidelines. She then engaged in a tense back and forth with reporters.
As a right protected by the First Amendment, the president wants to see these communities open. Dr. Birx was integral to making these guidelines, and they lay out a pretty clear path for faith communities to reopen.
The president said he's going to override the governors. Under what authority would he do that?
You're posing a hypothetical, and I think we can all hope that we see governors.
He would override the governors.
You're posing a hypothetical, though. We're assuming that governors are going to keep churches shut down and keep mosques shut down and keep synagogues shut down. That is a hypothetical question, and we'll leave it to these faith communities to reopen. We'll leave it to faith communities to reopen. And Kristen, I think we can all hope that this Sunday people are allowed to pray to their gods across this country. That's a good thing. You can clean your facilities, promote social distancing. So this is something that we should all look at and be thankful that we are encouraging these faith communities to reopen and do so in a safe way.
Does the White House now support these churches that are defying governor's orders and opening up?
The president president's been very clear. He wants churches to reopen. He wants them to do it safely. He wants them to do it in accordance with our guidance. It's laid out very detailed. It's posted now, so you can all take a look through it. And he wants to see all of those churches open in a safe fashion.
The governor does not allow that. Does the White House support churches defying these executive orders?
The president's been very clear. He wants to see churches reopen in accordance with his guidelines.
So the answer is yes?
I gave you an answer.
The president would like churches to reopen and do it in accordance with the guidelines.
What specific provision of federal law allows the president to override a governor?
The president will strongly encourage every governor to allow their churches to reopen. And boy, it's interesting to be in a room that desperately wants to seem to see these churches and houses of worship stay closed.
The president said that he has that.
Haley, I object to that. I mean, I go to church. I'm dying to go back to church. The question that we're asking you and would like to have asked the president and Dr. Birx is it safe? And if it's not safe, is the president trying to encourage that, or does the president agree with Dr. Birx that people should wait?
Jeff, it is safe to reopen your churches if you do so in accordance with the guidelines. So I am thankful that we have a president that celebrates the First Amendment. The same amendment that gives you all the ability to ask me questions is there to have the freedom of worship.
And that's Kayleigh McEnany, the president's press secretary. A person who attended a religious service on Mother's Day at a church in Northern California, defying the governor's orders against reopening, later tested positive for the coronavirus, exposing more than 180 churchgoers. Some religious leaders have taken issue with Trump. Rabbi Jack Moline, president of the Interfaith Alliance, said it was completely irresponsible for Trump to command a mass reopening of houses of worship. And a new study of nearly 100,000 patients around the world says a malaria drug pushed by President Trump as a treatment for coronavirus did not help and was tied to a greater risk of death. Friday's report in the journal Lancet is the largest study of chloroquine made so far in real-world settings at 671 hospitals on six continents. One study leader, Dr. Mandeep Mehra, a heart specialist at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, says not only is there no benefit, but we saw a very consistent signal of harm. Trump recently announced he's taking the drug to try and prevent infection or minimize symptoms of the coronavirus. He's claimed that critics are liberals who are trying to take him down. But Dr. Mike Ryan of the World Health Organization said today there's just no proof the drug works.
At the present time, there is no evidence from randomized controlled trials for the effectiveness of hydroxychloroquine or chloroquine in the treatment or prophylaxis against COVID-19. However, given some of the early data available on its use, the drug has been introduced to a number of randomized controlled trials, including the WHO Solidarity trials, in order to prospectively see what value the drug has. We know that a number of federal agencies around the world, a number of regulatory agencies, have issued warnings indicating that the use of the drug should be reserved even when it is used outside clinical trials for use in clinical settings under close clinical supervision because of the likely side effects, particularly in patients with severe COVID-19, where people have noticed the emergence of cardiac complications, including cardiac arrhythmias.
Dr. Mike Ryan of the World Health Organization. And an outbreak of COVID-19 disease in Brazil is spreading like wildfire. The South American nation is now ranked third in the world in terms of total cases, behind the United States and Russia. More than 20,000 have died. President Jair Bolsonaro appears to be blind to the problem, more concerned about rallying Brazil's flagging economy. He called on lifting lockdown measures on Thursday. Dr. Mike Ryan again.
So many countries. The situation in Brazil right now, we have, approaching 300,000 cases. I think just over 290,000 cases of confirmed disease in Brazil, with nearly 19,000 deaths. The majority of the cases are from the Sao Paulo region, but also Rio de Janeiro, Piauí, Amazonas, and Pernambuco are affected. But in terms of attack rates, the highest attack rates are actually in Amazonas, about 490 persons infected per 100,000 population, which is quite a high attack rate. In terms of the response, our colleagues in PAHO are providing direct assistance to the government, to many of the states that are badly affected, including Amazonas. In a sense, South America has become a new epicenter for the disease. We've seen many South American countries with increasing numbers of cases, and clearly there's a concern across many of those countries, but certainly the most affected is Brazil at this point. We also note that the government of Brazil has approved the use of hydroxychloroquine chloroquine for broader use, but we do point to the fact that our current clinical and systematic reviews carried out by the Pan American Health Organization and the current clinical evidence does not support the widespread use of hydroxychloroquine for the treatment of COVID-19, not until the trials are completed and we have clear results.
Bolsonaro has referred to the virus as a tiny flu. He fired the country's top public health official in April, and then, less than a month later, the new health minister resigned after refusing to endorse the president's unproven treatments. And finally, South Korea will provide 10,000 masks and hand sanitizer to help Navajo veterans of the 1950-1953 Korean War fight the coronavirus. That's according to the Korean government, South Korean. It was the latest humanitarian shipment from South Korea ahead of the 70th anniversary of the June 25th start of the war that pitted the United States and the South against the North. Health authorities have reported 3,912 positive cases and 140 deaths on the Desert Reservation, which covers parts of New Mexico, Arizona, and Utah, and has a population of 175,000. About 800 Navajo men served in the war, many as code talkers, who used their native language as an unbreakable code to confound opposing forces. Around 130 of the Navajo veterans are still alive. And that's some of the news for Friday, May 22nd, 2020. The news was produced by Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo. Have a happy and safe Memorial Day weekend.